Off top, until the early 1900s, people put borax, roach poison, in spoiled milk because it eliminated the odor and the taste. They thought that it made it unspoiled, I guess? I don't know. Play the music.
This is the Dominique Foxworth Show.
Welcome to the Dominique Foxworth Show. I'm here with the snack, Charlie Kravitz, here to put borax in all of my hot takes. I can't wait. Did you enjoy your weekend?
I had a great weekend.
Got your knees out?
Oh, feeling yeah.
Good?
It's 85 degrees here in D.C. The knees are out. Milky thighs.
I was at a pool today. It was nice. Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Love a pool day.
Yeah, it was a nice pool day. The kids enjoyed themselves, and I got to talk to a lot of random people about football.
I had a day that would have been your nightmare.
Uh-oh. Just talking to people?
Our neighbors, who are lovely, had like a neighborhood brunch amongst couples our age in the neighborhood. And I had to make small talk with a bunch of people I didn't know. And none of them cared about football. That would have been the easiest thing.
Yeah, that's pretty great. Yeah, small talk's not my thing. But if they didn't want to talk about football, then that would have been pretty fun.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm off time talking about football. Actually, I got into some good conversations. Mm. There was a guy there who was a Vikings fan who moved here from Minnesota, and he was not happy with his draft. I was like, but JJ, potentially, no, he stinks. Like, how do you know? Relax. Then he started bad-mouthing Kirk Cousins, but he also said he wanted him back.
Mm. I loved all the memes of JJ McCarthy this weekend of looking like a 9-year-old in his suit, in his sneakers. Funny. He did look like a little kid at a wedding.
He did. He'd very much like, you got to get you a better tailor. Like, that's what it comes down to. That's when your suit, when you look like a kid in your suit. Also, he had a baby face, but like a kid in your suit.
I can relate.
You do have a baby face, but I bet you got some sharp tailored suits. Keep them tight.
Not when I was a fat. Then you have a period. Here's the thing is like when you're a true fat, then you have the period where you can't keep buying clothes as you start going down. You have to like, you have to be like, I have to wear it for this 6-month period as I'm losing weight and nothing's going to fit. And then you can't go too skinny because it's like, am I going to hemorrhage more confidence right now?
When did you lose weight?
I was like 19.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you ain't had no nice clothes then anyway.
No.
Yeah. Not that you, I mean.
Really, I was really just dressing like, you know, like a 90s rapper for about a year.
Just baggy.
Gigantic stuff. It was the 2003 draft every day for me.
Oh, gosh. All right.
Should we talk about the Atlanta Falcons who poured borax on a potentially old and spoiled quarterback
and
Michael Penix Jr.? No. Yeah. So that was the story of the draft. We have had a couple days to digest that spoiled milk in round one. What are your thoughts, have you had more time to think about the Falcons with the 8th pick in the draft, having just signed Kirk Cousins to 4 years, $180 million, 100 guaranteed, to then draft 24-year-old Michael Penix Jr., who had an amazing college career but had a lot of injuries, with the 8th pick, above where the consensus had him on a lot of people's boards?
So I don't think I have to go through the obvious reaction to all this. My reaction immediately was like everyone else's, was shocked. Now, I assume anyone who's listening to this podcast already has probably heard or read the reasons why the pick is foolish and not all that strategic, which I can't argue against. However, I think where I did get up the morning after the draft, and I found myself in the pre-show meeting listening to everyone say how stupid and nonsensical and illogical the decision was. And I got a little bit of a contrarian streak.
Weird.
Yeah. But I was like, all right, these people aren't idiots. Maybe the decision they made was bad, but there has to be a thought process in here that makes sense to them. And can I see a way to make it make sense to me? And this is how it makes sense to me. If you think about your goal as a general manager or as an organization is to win a Super Bowl, you add Kirk Cousins. So now your Super Bowl chances, if you give it a percentage chance, I'd say, I don't know, 15% chance to win a Super Bowl. If you had 0% last year, Kirk Cousins adds 15%. At that number one round pick, that 8th overall pick, is there anyone left in the draft that can take us up to 30%? No, there's not one player that can do that. Not that I saw in the draft. And normally, a player that can have an impact like that is going to be a quarterback. And that's what they did. I think that instead of going all in on the Kirk Cousins plan right now, which I think most people expected them to do in the NFC that's not super strong, they went and got a legitimate above average quarterback to add to a lot of skill talent and an improving defense. And the assumption is we're all in right now. I kind of feel like they saw Michael Penix and thought, are we going to add Dallas Turner to this team and take ourselves from a 15% Super Bowl chance to a 17% Super Bowl chance? Or are we going to draft Michael Penix, whom we believe is a Pro Bowl level quarterback, and 3 years from now or 2 years from now, we'll be at 30% chance to win the Super Bowl? So I honestly think that it feels kind of like what it is, honestly, and what they're being criticized for is true. Is they're kind of punting on a strategy that they just signed off on a couple months ago, which, of course, we could rip that apart.
They're not operating, or they are operating under the sunk cost fallacy.
Yeah, they are. This is the most sunk cost decision making I've ever seen, which you normally commend people who can operate under the sunk cost fallacy.
Mm-hmm. What I think is interesting is that before this draft, I'm partially picking this example because I know how much you have invested in like the Cowboys part of this.
Okay.
Like the perceived odds before the draft, the Cowboys were 17-1 to win the Super Bowl, 5.6% chance perceived odds, and the Falcons were 22-1, a little over 4% perceived chance to win the Super Bowl. And we think that the Cowboys are close. The betting markets, partially probably because of the division, partially because I think a lot of people think that the skill positions can, for the Falcons, can perform better than they did under Arthur Smith with Desmond Ridder playing quarterback. But what I think is interesting is that if you're Terry Fontenot right now, you don't think...
GM for the Falcons.
Yes. You don't think that Rome Odunze or Olufoshanu or any of the defensive players, none had been off the board by that point, could do anything to put you in the mix and have a better chance this year or next year.
So make a better chance? I think absolutely. But where I want to pin you down and pin down anyone who thinks that this is ridiculous is like, how much better chance? And to push back on the Cowboys example is a proven success with this unit, with these coaches, with these players. And while they haven't won a Super Bowl, they've had success. The Falcons is still not. They've never had this success. We're assuming that an older quarterback coming off an Achilles who's been really good for much of his career is going to put them there. So I think it's slightly different in assuming that both of these teams are close. So yeah, it'd have been harder for me to wrap my head around this decision if the Cowboys did it. Actually, might have been easier to wrap your head around it because the decision there is like, all right, we got one more year with this guy and it's clear that we are making a decision to move on. But I get being more offended by that because the Cowboys do, despite their playoff woes, they do feel close, and it does feel like a tweak here or there could be the difference in putting them over the top. The Falcons don't feel like that to me.
You're not as upset with the process because I think one of the things people are upset with is the fact that they just signed Kirk Cousins. They've had Penix Jr.'s, presumably they've had his medicals since the combine, since before they signed Cousins. So the process of investing all of that in turning Cousins into a stopgap quarterback seems like it's not the best way to build a roster. And I know that you're big on situation being essential, and you either wasted the chance to build out a better roster around Penix or a better roster around Cousins, or trade the pick and get more capital and have more chances at that.
Yeah, I can't argue that the process was good. I think that part of this is about the one position that we check for every team every year is quarterback. Like, we don't have any conversations about your team unless you got a check mark in that quarterback box. We don't take you seriously. We don't think you're going to win. So I think even if, and Terry Fontenot didn't help himself by saying, if Michael Penix sits for 4 years, then we got a good problem. But even if he sits for 4 years.
Be 29 the first time he plays.
Be 29, and let's say he gives you 6 or 7, 8 good years of quarterback after that. Mm-hmm. Having that much stability at that position, and that's assuming that he's good, so this is all risk. But having that much stability at that position is something that most teams don't have, and they wish they did. And so, again, I can't argue. I think the difficult thing for me is immediately after the draft, we have to grade these guys based on how much value they got for the positions that they were in and how it's going to impact their team in the immediate future and how much they could have gotten elsewhere. I get all that. But that is all kind of algorithmic in that you can set up a robot to make these decisions. However, we have people making these decisions, and I know you're going to say, which I believe also, that no one really knows who's going to be great and who's not going to be great. But they obviously think that Michael Penix is going to be great. And the weird part about finding myself on the, if this is the spectrum and this is Terry Fontenot knowing that and the Falcons are idiots. And over here is, for those listening, this hands are really far apart. Over here is that he's a genius. I'm still like on the idiot side of the middle, but I'm just close to the middle. So relative to everyone else, it looks like I'm defending Terry Fontenot, but all I'm doing is trying to suggest that there is some logic to this process. And I know there's no way to grade this out in a way that works, but the fact of the matter is all that matters is if they're going to win championships, right? And
yes,
we'll 10 years from now, we'll look back and decide whether this was like an ingenious risk to take or it was the what sent Terry Fontenot down back to assistant GM somewhere.
I mean, even if it was, even if he's great, it was bad process. It's Agreed. Not like he didn't fall to eight.
Yeah.
They reached for him to eight. Like at
well, I mean, it's just the words that you choose there. Like
he was seen as like a late first round prospect right. by a lot of people. I know the Raiders were connected to him at 13, but like it's someone who I think based on draft grades, a lot of people think he was drafted above his slot. Mm. And I do wonder how much has changed from his pro day when he went out and showed that all of his ligaments work and he ran a 4.46, even though he's not a running quarterback. Mm-hmm. But like this is someone whose performance in Penix Jr., like he almost won the Big Ten with Indiana.
I mean, that's enough to get you like, number one overall pick, I would think.
Like he's obviously was an awesome college football player. He has massive hands. He loves to push the ball downfield. He's also had two ACL tears in the same knee and shoulder issues and got the living beat out of him in the national championship game where he was grabbing his ribs for half the game.
Yeah.
There are legitimate injury concerns of why he wasn't viewed at the top of the draft. Because from a developmental curve, he's not all that different than someone like Jaden Daniels or Bo Nix. I mean, the Bo Nix pick got panned as well. We'll get to that. Mm-hmm. But like of these older quarterbacks who took their developmental lumps in college rather than the NFL.
Yeah.
I think the interesting thing also is like it's how you build your team. This is a general manager. The reason people are criticizing him also, he took a tight end 4.
Yeah.
Viewed as generational tight end prospect. He's had knee problems. He's had half of a good season in the NFL. He took Drake London with another top 10 pick. He's a receiver who ran a 4.58 40. Not your type of guy.
No.
Has not panned out incredibly well in the NFL, although he still has some tools. And he took a running back at number 8. So like one of the things he does is not follow the perceived value draft chart. Yeah.
It makes it really hard to defend Terry Fontenot in this situation, looking at his track record. Both the draft track record and the on-field results of the players drafted. So when you go outside of the convention, I guess my major point is Terry Fontenot's not an idiot. Like, he knew that this pick was not going to be well-received. But when you go outside, I find myself, like, having some, like, appreciation for guys who are willing to, like, last year with the Lions, like, I also was like, man, you're going to get an interior linebacker and a running back early in the thing? Like, all right, they know. They read the same we read. They got the same analytics people in their building. They know that's not what you should draft. But if you have enough faith and conviction in your ability to evaluate players and to, like, build them into your system that you're like, this is our guy. Like, I respect that, and I want to encourage that. You know when the draft was born? When we knew all 4 people were being drafted. This is interesting and exciting to me. I hope, like hell, that it works, because it'll be more fun.
You know why I doubt him the most?
Why?
Because this I would do. Drafting running backs, that guy, look, basketball playing receiver, Drake London. Have you seen Bijan's highlights?
Yeah.
He's sick.
Yeah.
Like, did you see Michael Penix in the national semifinal game? That dude can sling the pill. He can spin the pill, baby.
These are his very short first round draft history is kind of like reflective of what you would do if you watched a couple college football games a year.
It just like, yeah. And also to me, it's like, this is something that you see in the NBA where it's like a team has cap space and the Pistons go out and sign Josh Smith and Andre Drummond and Greg Monroe. And it's like, you look at the raw numbers and it's like, that's a plan. I guess it's a plan.
It's something. Yeah.
You brought up the Lions.
Okay.
Lions
are we getting off the Falcons?
No, it's part of it.
Okay.
Because their build last year, they had the opportunity to potentially move up and draft Anthony Richardson or draft one of the quarterbacks, but they didn't because they felt that their roster was good enough to compete for a Super Bowl. They ended up being the second best team in the NFC. Mm. To me, that seems like something that Dominique Foxworth would like, is build out the roster for the quarterback. And the Falcons did the opposite here.
No, I think the Falcons believed that their roster was already built out for the quarterback.
But they have the quarterback in theory. They just paid $100 million in guaranteed money for Kirk Cousins.
Yeah, it does to me. That's what I'm saying is it feels like the only way I can justify this decision is if they are – because I know one thing that I've always kind of preached against is teams that think that they can build for now and for the future.
Yes.
And this kind of –
James Wiseman.
Yeah. Yes, that's the example that I point to often, the Golden State Warriors. But this is kind of – I think the Warriors should have traded that draft pick back then to get some players that could have helped them now. This kind of looks like that, but I don't think that's what it is. I think this is them saying – which is – it's not better. It's just as damning. But this is them saying, no, this Kirk Cousins playing. we're not going to win a championship with him. And maybe we can give ourselves the chances to win a championship in the future. We're going to use Kirk Cousins as an overpaid bridge quarterback to allow Michael Penix to address any shortcomings he has in his game until he is ready to play. I'm not saying it's right. I'm saying that's the only way that it makes sense.
It's just nuts. I'm sorry. I've been playing. This is insane. You left your key. You pillaged your cap space. Yeah. Nothing has changed. You knew Michael Penix Jr. was going to be there at 8 when you signed Kirk Cousins. It would have been shocking to everyone if that guy is a top 7 pick in the draft, because then you're picking him over the first 3 quarterbacks. You're picking him over Joe Walt. You're picking him over the receivers.
So you're saying what I disagree with you by saying is saying that they knew that he would be there.
100%.
That's absurd.
It's not absurd.
So there was no chance that anybody else was going to trade up?
No.
That's ridiculous.
In the top 8 to draft Michael Penix Jr.
Yes.
That's why we were shocked by it. We wouldn't be shocked by the
pick. We were shocked by it because it was the Falcons. We weren't shocked by it because Michael Penix went,
Michael Penix going in the top 8 of this draft is JJ, shocking. Above Adunze, shocking.
J.J. McCarthy was supposed to go ahead of him. He didn't. Mm-hmm. Did that shock you? Because I know you think that Michael Penix is better than J.J. McCarthy.
I mean, the only reason I was shocked is because you had told me insiders, sources, that McCarthy was going to the Giants.
That's what I thought. I mean,
so I started telling all my friends. I was like, there are whispers from McCarthy to the Giants.
My bad. I didn't. I
got a lot of friends from New York. I was like, get ready to relearn Eli, buddy.
You were messing with him?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So, I think this is absurd for you to suggest that months ago, they knew that Michael Penix would be there at 8. I don't think that's true. But
I think I would have clutched my pearls and guffawed so loudly if you had told me a month ago that it would have been shocking that he was there for the 8th pick.
Okay.
That's stunning to me.
And the same thing you would have done for Bo Nix.
Yes.
So it's possible that Terry Fontenot knows a little bit more about what's happening in an NFL than you. And it's possible that Terry Fontenot, who thought that that Michael Penix, his evaluation was the second best quarterback in his draft, it's possible that he thought other people saw that value also and that they would want to trade up and get him. We all knew, we expected, you said if the Raiders would have got him, right? That was your belief. Yep. Yeah, they were at 13. So you think the Raiders couldn't have traded up? So this is stupid. Obviously, they did not know that he would be there at 8 back then. As much as these draft things change, and as good as they think that player is, they did not know he would be there at 8. They are following and understand the trend now is go ahead and take a shot at a quarterback. So get the off the table.
I don't think that's off the table.
What? That they knew he would be there at 8?
Yes.
I think
they thought he was the number 2 quarterback in the draft period, and they didn't think he was going to be there at 8, and he was an undervalued asset. They would have thought about moving up, but they thought no one ahead of him was considering drafting Michael Penix Jr.
I don't see this is you're making more assumptions than I think you can make based on information.
But this happens every year in the NFL draft. There are guys like Cleveland Farrell gets overdrafted, like Tyson Alualu gets overdrafted, and it's not because other teams are clamoring to move up to get those guys. It's that they have an inconsistent evaluation compared to the rest of the teams in the NFL. That's why those guys go higher.
Okay, so that's not why quarterbacks go higher. That's why pass rushers go higher, because people are projecting them. Quarterbacks go higher because quarterbacks are very valuable. And the idea that the most valuable position, one of the better players, is still going to be around, I think assuming that is absurd. And saying that they would have traded up, to me, and I know you're saying it was a reach, and you can call it a reach. Whatever terminology you use is fine. They viewed it as a fall. It was not a reach. They were sitting there we have a quarterback. But if this guy who is awesome is still on the board at 8, we're going to draft him. Saying that if they really wanted him, they would have traded up is different than how the process went. I'm not arguing that the process is good, but I'm saying that they did not sign Kirk Cousins knowing that Michael Penix was going to be available. That is just categorically absurd to assume.
That's why people are calling Terry Fontenot a buffoon. Because that's what people assume.
Those people are buffoons. Like
that's, so we're pointing their fingers at the wrong buffoons.
I mean, they could all be buffoons. There's not a limit on buffoons. I don't cap my buffoon finger pointing. There's a ton of buffoons out there.
If there's one thing that we know, it's that absolutes are for children and
dumb people.
Or buffoons. Yeah, so I guess there's no absolutes in this. So that this is an interesting thing, because this is about draft capital. Because all I think if the Falcons had drafted Michael Penix Jr. at like 26, people would have like golf clapping, like, this is great. Yeah. You have a quarterback coming off an Achilles tear. This is what you see with Jordan Love. This is what you see. I mean, obviously, the most extreme example is Lamar, of someone who obviously the evaluation. Slid. Yeah, and the evaluations were so disparate in that quarterback draft. No one had a consensus number one guy. Like it went from Josh Rosen to Sam Darnold to Josh Allen to Lamar Jackson, and he slid. But to me, this is different, because this is like a really valuable pick in a draft where there were so many good offensive players. Like, he went above a receiver who people think could be like an impact number one receiver day one in the NFL. And we've seen how much rookie receivers can change an offense.
Yeah, I can't argue against any of that. Like, that's the point that I'm making to you. But the point that you refuse to accept, that I'm trying to argue in defense of Terry Fontenot, is that we're talking about winning a championship. If you're not a quarterback, your impact on winning a championship is much smaller. So if you believe this is the fundamental, like, basic, like, fork in the road that I am constructing for Terry Fontenot in order to make his decision seem less dumb. Okay, let's draft Dallas Turner, which is who people thought they might draft there, the pass rusher or defensive end. I feel bad, like,
he's 240 pounds. Yeah, he's a defensive end, but he's not.
Yeah. But anyway, from Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so can we accept that adding Kirk Cousins gives them a 15% chance to win a Super Bowl? Is that fine?
I would say Vegas has 4%.
Okay, 4% chance to win a Super Bowl.
If Patrick Mahomes exists, let's
go 4%. That's fine. or getting to the Super Bowl. Let's go getting to the Super Bowl. Going from what their quarterback situation was last year to now, you're saying that Vegas has it as adding 4%, because we're going to say it was zero last time. Okay, so
it's known zero. They lost.
Answer me this. How much do you improve? How much do you believe that improves if you add Dallas Turner?
I have no idea.
Because it's if freaking Kirk Cousins only takes up to 4%, Dallas Turner is a fraction of that. So anyway, I don't need you to answer the questions if you're not going to play the game the right way. The point is, there was nobody in the draft. Even if you said that somebody was in the draft.
What about Adunze?
Okay, you say it gives you 1%. You can say it gives you 2%. Now you're up to 6% chance.
Which is better odds than the Cowboys.
Whatever.
Who you think are close.
You get the point that I'm making. The point that I'm making. Forget your stupid odds. You get the point that I'm making. You're undercutting a good conversation, because the point that I'm making is, if you then go down this other fork where you have a quarterback who is better than him, which they believe he is, who is great, then 5 years from now, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, you are now in the much higher percentage range. So, like, that's the decision. That's my point is, they are punting on small odds right now because they believe that they can increase their odds in the future.
Yep.
Is this the right process? Hell no. But if it turns out that he's great, then none of this matters. And I get it. We can't evaluate this draft based on the future that we don't understand. We can only evaluate it based on how many assets they got for the value of the position. I get it. Their draft should be panned based on that.
And he's old.
It is. I mean, that's
he went to the beach that makes you old.
That's calculated into the value, and it's fine. It should be panned based on all of that. But where I like bristle a little bit is when people are just like, it's just so stupid. Like, he just like didn't know that he had Kirk Cousins. Like, this seems to me like it's an obvious decision. Maybe it's a bad decision, but is it obvious decision?
It's just like, okay, so the logic is reductive on both sides, because flipping logic the other way, being like, yeah, if you got a great quarterback with a number 8 pick, it's a great pick. Like, of course. Of course.
Yeah, that's all I'm saying.
But here's a question I have for you.
That's all I'm saying is, okay.
Can we flip this? Can I be Terry Fontenot? Can you be?
No. You ain't let me go smoothly through my analogy, so slow down. All I'm saying is, no one in the history of anyone has ever said, pass up on a great quarterback because you got Kirk Cousins. That's all I'm saying. They did not think that great quarterback was going to be there. They saw the great quarterback, and I think that it's reasonable to argue, I'm not going to let Kirk Cousins on a 4-year deal coming off Achilles tear stop me from drafting a great quarterback. That's all.
Full bloom quarterback. I saw. Yeah, can't believe you've Gettleman.
You've
turned into Gettleman. You'd be like, I saw a professional quarterback. I felt.
I'm not arguing that I believe this was right. I'm just saying that that's what they must think, and I respect that they are not cowards like so many other people who are like, no, I ain't gonna draft them because they're gonna make fun of me. I just signed Kirk Cousins. That's what I'm gonna do. No, they saw something they want and they got it.
Yep. So I'm gonna be Terry Fontenot now. Mm-mm. You're going to be on the Atlanta Falcons.
Okay. I'm a player?
You're a player.
All right, cool.
I'll be there. Yeah, you're a locker room lawyer. You're in there. You're a leader. You're a leader on the team. All right. Your voice carries weight. Mm-hmm. You've drafted all of these skill position players. You've just signed the quarterback who you know can be an above average player if he's healthy in the NFL. You finally have a real coach in Raheem Morris.
I'm pissed.
And
if I'm a player on that team,
that's pissed. Exactly right. Yeah. Is it unfair? Because you think you have a shot at the Super Bowl or going well, and now they brought in a quarterback who is old.
I'm pissed. What are we doing? Yeah. I'm trying to win. Yes. I don't know. You thought you were going to corner me?
No, that's like, exactly.
It felt like you set me up to corner me. Like, this is the whole thing I've been saying the whole time is like, I wouldn't have done this. I think that it should be panned, but it's not idiotic. It's my only defense. Like, yeah, I'd be pissed because it's sending the message to them. Is the same message that it's sending to me. Oh, we ain't really gonna go all in right now. And so I'm there like, I thought we was gonna go all in right now.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna be here when Michael Penix is ready to roll. I'm gonna be on another team or I'm gonna be home. And so, yeah, I'd be pissed. And the other complication for the locker room situation, I believe, is...
We know Kirk is sad. He's
yeah, not sad even boy. That. I think it's...
Hurt? He said hurt? I've been hurt?
He's hurt, but he's a...
Cousins?
We've had this conversation before. I always remind you that quarterbacks think that they're quarterbacks and don't realize that they're football players.
Yeah.
Kirk Cousins just got treated like a football player. This is what happened. This is what happens to all of us, including the quarterbacks eventually. But that was the issue that I was saying for the locker room. The other issue for the locker room is the other way. It's that if Kirk Cousins isn't playing well, there's going to be a faction in that locker room that only watched that semifinal game. And let's say hypothetically that Michael Penix is putting in work on scout team.
Lasers.
Oh.
When he's wearing shorts. Zip.
That's the worst part too, because the scout team goes up against the defense. And the defense are the people who are complaining on the sideline or in the locker room most of the time about the offense. And so they're going to be out there like, you see what Michael Penix just did to us? Why are we doing this with Kurt? That's a whole nother issue to deal with.
So, to put a bow on this part of the conversation.
Oh, it's no bow. This is going to go on for a while, I can tell.
You think it was bad process, but you just don't want to call Terry Fontenot an idiot. There had to be some logic. You're just saying he didn't Leroy Jenkins the pick and just say, draft.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. And I think that I respect the conviction that he must have and the faith that he must have in his evaluation ability. I know that all draft analysis is based on the assumption that general managers cannot evaluate talent.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's how the analysis, we're analyzing how much value you got for a position at a spot. Like, this is the same thing with, like, the conversation of, do you pay Christian McCaffrey? I would have said, hell yeah, because he's not just a running back, he's special. But if the 49ers pay Christian McCaffrey and then, or well, they signed him. I guess the Panthers paid him. But anyway, you pay him and then he gets hurt. Then everyone's going to say, that was dumb. No one pays running backs. So this is the same thing to me.
Yeah.
It's a high risk kind of decision. If Michael Penix goes on to be great, we're going to look back at this and we're going to retell the story about how Terry Fontenot had so much conviction in his evaluation process that he got out there and he made a decision and he put his job on the line, and we respect him because he's a great quarterback evaluator. If it doesn't work out, he's going to be unemployed. I guess personally, I like that because
right for the wrong reason. Very dominant.
No, not being right for the wrong reasons. Understanding that if y'all wanted a robot to do this job, you should have hired one. Like,
okay.
There's something that they see that we don't see.
How good does he have to be to justify the pick?
He just got to be a franchise quarterback. Kirk Cousins is not going to be good in 4 years.
Probably right? not.
Or maybe not in 2 years. I think you just have to have a starting quarterback.
So,
like as good as Kirk Cousins?
He has to be Kirk Cousins level to justify the pick. Like if he's Jared Goff.
Well, which Jared Goff? Like Jared Goff last year? Yeah. great. Yeah.
I'm trying to go through the list. So he just can't be like, he can't be like Russell Wilson last year.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's terrible. That's unfortunate. But, I mean, that's the point. It's, if you are solidifying the most important position, how much would you give away? And there's also...
If he's Tua Tagovailoa.
Which Tua? I mean, the Tua last year was pretty great.
The Tua's the same all the time. It's around him.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's what this league has become about. Like I mentioned, if you can keep a check in that box, then you are a competitor. If they have found a way to extend the check in the quarterback box, then it was a good decision. If he stinks, it's not. I mean, and then it's a bad decision if Dallas Turner turns out to be Myles Garrett. You blew it. I get that. But, I mean, that's, I don't know. I just feels foolish to me to keep going through these draft evaluations. It's just like, he's such an idiot. He got the same programs that we got. He knew what the computer told him to do. And he was like, you know what? I don't care what the computer says. I've seen something in this guy that I believe is worth taking this risk. There is nothing. If you can get a starting quarterback at any point in any round, you do it.
So you think a quarterback should be like the top five picks in every draft?
No.
Because that's the risk.
If the quarterbacks are good enough, yeah. Yep. But if they aren't, then no. And the situation matters, I think. I think you used the Cowboys was a good line of demarcation where I kind of would have been really confused, but it would have made some sense because of the Dak money. But the Cowboys have shown consistent success.
What if the Cardinals had taken a quarterback at four?
Stop it. There's only one player in this draft that I believe is like a future Hall of Famer guarantee, and that's Marvin Harrison Jr. I don't do that. Trade back if you're going to do that.
Anything can happen. You never know.
Yeah, you're right. Anything can happen. I get your point, but I...
What if Marvin Harrison Jr. went three? What if the Patriots had taken Marvin Harrison Jr. and the Cardinals with Kyler Murray were at four?
Yeah, that gets really tricky and kind of silly, but I'm not going to say anything bad about Marvin Harrison Jr. He should have.
He's off the board in this scenario.
He's off the board in every scenario. I don't love that the Patriots drafted a quarterback, but because I feel like they aren't ready for it. But I get they have they got Jacoby Brissett, and they'll let Drake May sit for a little while, hopefully.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors. I do, you do, we all do, big, small. And when we keep them bottled up, as I sometimes have had happen in the past, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/DF today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/DF.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Barnstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Feeling like you need a marketing degree and an extra day in your week to successfully market your small business? Let Constant Contact do the heavy lifting for you. Constant Contact's award-winning marketing platform has powerful tools that make it easy to grow your audience, engage your customers, and sell more to boost your business. Now, in just a few clicks, you can launch a marketing campaign that's tailored to your business and goals. That includes email, social, SMS, and more. So you can sell more, raise more, and fast-track your business growth. Plus, you can always count on Constant Contact's award-winning customer support for guidance along the way. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Can we expand this out slightly? Because sure. I think this is pretty interesting. What did the run on quarterbacks in round one tell you about the state of play of quarterbacks and how the NFL views quarterback development? Because I think we've learned a lot that there are six guys in the top 12. Three of them, Bo Nix, Jaden Daniels, Michael Penix Jr., multiple college guys, older prospects, guys who are way further along in the amount of play they've had to develop than other guys. But there's also a shrinking middle class of quarterbacks between you're either like a guy or you're not a guy.
Yeah.
Are we learning that teams are looking like we can draft a guy and fit him into our system, like a Brock Purdy type of thing? Has that changed evaluation? Do you think they want guys that can sit longer, like Jordan Love? What is this a unique draft because of the quarterbacks available or because of the way teams are viewing quarterbacks now?
I think it's more about because the quarterbacks available. I guess it's probably a combination of both. It seems like, obviously, since the rookie pay scale changed, and that was Cam Newton's draft, and we recognize the value of a quarterback is such that you can justify taking a first round shot on someone who would have never been in the first round in the past based on their talent. Mm-hmm. So I think that's been happening since then. It's only gotten more and more intensified. And I think your point about Brock Purdy, it doesn't feel like this was a lesson learned from that, but like it's an example that people can point to give themselves confidence to make these sort of decisions.
Four-year starter.
Yeah, it's the same sort of thing. So I think this is more a reflection of the number of quarterbacks that came out than it is a reflection of the specific quarterbacks that came out than it is a reflection of a change of thinking. I think the thinking has already changed, mm-hmm. and now it got met with a unique class of a lot of really good quarterbacks.
So what I think is interesting about that is if there's an actual change in thought, will there be an actual change in extending these quarterbacks as we get to the second round? Like, is there going to be, are we going to start having a more rotating class of middle class quarterbacks? Because you can just draft another one that you can keep on a rookie deal and see if he can perform in the middle of the road quarterback level immediately. Because what's the point of paying these mid level guys if you can find more of them and fit them in?
That'd be a scary place to be, because then all 32 first round picks would be quarterbacks just about every year. I don't think we'll get to that point.
Yeah,
but
it just made me think about it, because if you're not fully happy with the guy, why pay him the – because before, the going rate was you become the highest paid quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah, I feel like that is like – the weird thing is, and I guess maybe all logic is a bit circular, is because I feel like this is like the far end of like valuing positions like computer guys thinking, but it also gets around to the same ridiculous thinking that got Atlanta to draft a quarterback, is like quarterbacks are so valuable,
mm-hmm.
and they're so cheap and they're so important that it doesn't really make sense. And if you're going to go by like my crude probability argument, it doesn't really make sense unless you have a guy in the draft like Myles Garrett or Marvin Harrison Jr. or, I don't know, Ja'Marr Chase or somebody that you just know is going to be a monster. It doesn't really make sense to get someone else who has some level of risk of bust and at their very highest end is not going to significantly change your championship window when you can broaden your championship window for longer if you just keep cycling through young quarterbacks until you land one. It's like, oh, this is the one. We can move on from this starter and then start to build around that.
It's just interesting because it's like you used to see guys like this. Andy Dalton's going the second round.
Yeah.
Kirk Cousins going the fourth round. Russ, who is an older two-team quarterback, obviously in the third round, he would have been the first or second pick in that draft if you redraft it with luck. But I just wonder if those guys are going to start scooting up. If there's going to be a fear of missing out on the next Jordan Love. Did he go 26th, 27th, right. Whatever. Lamar slid. That was an abomination. They ended up being 32. But like, I just wonder if there's any sort of quarterback prospect with value if all of those guys are going to end up in the top half of the first round now.
I mean, there has to be some cutoff, but I think we could.
Bo Nix. This is Bo Nix and Michael Penix Jr. are some people had them as late second round or early third round grades on talent.
I mean, this is, we talk long enough, we talk both ourselves into the opposite side of the argument, because now you're, I think initially you were arguing or you were pointing out that you think only Denver had Bo Nix rated this high and only Atlanta had Michael Penix rated this high. But if what you're saying now is true.
Sean Payton compared him to Patrick Mahomes.
Right, that was absurd. He didn't compare him to Patrick Mahomes. He said he learned from, he compared him to Drew Brees and said he learned from missing out on Patrick Mahomes, not to miss out on this quarterback.
I mean, he dropped the name intentionally.
Yeah, like, to get them in it, but whatever.
I learned from Michael Jordan after I drafted Sam Bowie that next time I should draft Michael Jordan.
Yeah, but I guess my point is, we've talked ourselves all the way around to the other side of the position, because now you're saying that everyone could potentially see value in quarterbacks that aren't highly valued, which if that's the case, then obviously Atlanta didn't know that he was going to be there at 8, because every team is thinking this now.
So would you have defended the decision if Bo Nix had been the 8th pick?
I think so. I mean, Michael Penix is a more attractive prospect. It makes it easier to defend. I watched a lot more Michael Penix and was more
same size, similar athletic profile.
Come on, Charlie. We doing this. You think that Michael Penix and Bo Nix are in the same class as far as ability?
I mean, I like Penix better.
Okay, so Penix everybody does.
I'm just saying, like, this guy, he completed set. I know his remedial offense. He completed 77% of his passes. He was very accurate.
Yeah, I guess the point is,
he's a great athlete.
It would be harder for me to get there because I believe in Michael Penix more than I do Bo Nix, but the logic would be the same. It's that they saw something that they thought was special and they took that shot. So, yeah, I guess I would have to defend it.
You'd
also
have to respect the process. You'd have to trust the process.
I would be, I hate the process. I would be sitting in the get up pre-show meeting thinking, damn, they're idiots. And then listen to everyone else say, damn, they're idiots. I say, oh,
just imagine Bo Nix had a different haircut. He doesn't have that haircut.
It's a tough
now look. Evaluate it.
That's a tough look, man. Who is his, like, it's not even like he hasn't, like, he's young. You know, a lot of college kids are young. They haven't had a good barber. Then they get to the new city and they get hooked up. Like, he's clearly getting, he going in and said, hit me with this this Drago. Marine joint, this jar head. Give me the jar head.
Give me the Drago.
It's a bad look.
It's I love the memes of how similar him and Zach Wilson look and how Sean Payton has a type.
Yeah, Zach Wilson. Oh, man, I love his draft because he was trying to learn how to be cool. You remember that? He was taking pictures. He was looking at
it. Oh, yeah, the mirror selfies.
No, not that. When he was taking the pictures with the guys, it was a bunch of guys, and they were, like, throwing up hands and doing peace signs, and he was looking around like, oh, this is what we do. I'm from BYU, guys. I don't know.
So based on where everyone landed, have you changed who you think will be the most likely to be successful earlier in their NFL career?
All right. So J.J. McCarthy is in the best spot.
Better than Caleb?
No. Caleb is the best quarterback in the best spot. Never mind. I take that back. J.J. McCarthy. We just haven't talked about Caleb much because it's been kind of like, all right, there's this guy. Then we can talk about all these other guys.
And they got Adunze, who the Falcons passed on, who's going to be a number one receiver. He might be the number one over DJ Moore immediately.
No, he won't be. Don't do that to my terp.
DJ Moore's awesome.
I know, yeah. And that's why he's going to be a number one receiver. Adunze needs to learn how to be a terp.
Keenan Allen's there too.
Yeah. Yeah, they're going to be good. That's the best situation that a number one overall pick has ever been in. It'll be phenomenal for him. I think after that, then JJ's in a really good spot. And I assume for the Washington situation isn't terrible. They have receivers, but they're also unproven. And
drafted really well this year.
Yeah, I mean, Adam Peters is from the John Lynch. I mean, I guess he's been around more places than the 49ers, but they're a team that seems to have a good process that works pretty well. So it's encouraging for them going forward. Where's he at? The Browns before them, I think. And then after that, obviously the quarterback that's in the toughest spot right now, I think, is Drake May.
Adam Peters, for the record, see him on TV. He could sell me anything. I saw him when he popped on the McAfee broadcast talking to Belichick. So handsome and charming.
You're a sucker for a pretty face?
Oh, yeah. Just tell me I'm going to be good now, Adam. I believe you. But no, I mean, like, yeah, I think the interesting part about this is Drake May. Like, I mean, obviously, I don't know what I'm talking about, but I thought based on the tools and, like, being compared to Josh Allen, Justin Herbert, I was like, oh, great, take Drake May with the second pick in the draft. He's 2 years younger than Jaden Daniels, but think the interesting thing now, this is going to be like a test case of your theory of how much situation matters, because he's clearly in the worst situation.
Yeah.
And I think it'll be really interesting to look up in 4 or 5 years if that flips and the team's really good. Like, are we going to be like, oh, well, they ended up building it out around him? Or is it that this guy, that talent overruled it because he is set up to fail?
Well, I mean, what's past the theory? A law? It's clearly not a theory anymore. It's a law that occasionally gets broken. So I think that there are...
He's a bad boy.
There, what would happen if he has success is he doesn't play much, if at all, this season. And they start to build it.
They have to play Brissett the whole year. Yeah. They should.
Yeah. And it doesn't make sense to put him out there unless it's in garbage time or unless there's some injuries. But that's enough time for them to start to address the issues around this team. So I think his situation may not be bad by the time he's actually, or may not be as bad. And that defense is good. But his situation may not be that bad by the time they ask him to actually do something. If that defense can keep games close, there won't be a lot of pressure on whomever the starting quarterback is. But that situation can get better fast.
Mm. I think, I think Caleb's the clear answer for, yeah, for best. I mean, the McCarthy one is interesting too, because he's going to, I wonder this year if this situation is good enough that we're going to look up at Sam Darnold sort of slinging it around in Minnesota and McCarthy gets to sit for a lot of the year, or if they'll put him out there, because I do have concerns of him being good immediately regardless of situation.
Yeah. Yeah, his situation's good, but you're right. He probably won't even start at the beginning of the year. That's a developmental situation.
Okay, outside of the quarterbacks, I guess you could use a team that drafted a quarterback in the situation, but it'd be very boring to pick the Bears. What team left the draft in considerably better shape than they headed into it?
Eagles.
Ding, yeah. Ding, ding.
Yeah, the Eagles drafted two corners with their first two picks.
Your mans, too. Yeah. Both of them are your mans.
Yeah, they got Quinyon Mitchell out of Toledo, and they got the Rosa Parks of cornerbacks, my man Cooper DeJean, Great White Hope.
I saw a lot of people saying you should wear number 42. That's a hilarious idea.
Was that Invincible?
Jackie Robinson.
I thought you were making an Invincible joke. Jackie,
it wasn't my joke. I'm stealing it from Twitter for the record.
I need to be on Twitter more often. They're funny. Yeah, I like him. He's a versatile player. Probably gonna move to safety. No, they're gonna keep that corner, but he could play safety too. And I think that is a big issue that they had their secondary last year. It's aging and weak. So I love getting those two guys at the top of the draft.
I'm gonna take the Kansas City Chiefs. And this is going to go to this follow-up of this. I love that they are basically like, we got a tackle in the second round, an incredibly deep tackle draft. We got, what does Dominique Foxworth fear as a cornerback?
Oh, speed.
And shiftiness. And
shiftiness.
Xavier Worthy is 4-2-1 and shifty. He's someone who caught the ball around the line of scrimmage a lot. And they drafted Jared Wiley in the third round as a tight end who athletically is completely off the charts. Swiss Army knife, complete freak. And then to the back half of this question is who blew it?
Yeah.
Who blew it?
I kind of look at the Raiders as a team that's like, I don't know. When you're the Raiders, you got to get best available. But the idea of going back-to-back tight ends, and I've heard people argue that these two tight ends can be on a field at the same time. That's fine. I get it. But we all accept that tight end is not a huge, like, high-impact position. And going for a tight end at that point suggests that what you were saying is true, is that they didn't think these quarterbacks were going off the board. Because Brock Bowers, as athletic as he is, he seems like you get the best value out of him if he goes somewhere where they already have an established quarterback and offense.
You wanted the Raiders to be computer guys.
I did want him to be computer guys. This is unfair because now I've given you this argument to use against me. But what I said several times is it doesn't mean that I agree with it. I just understand it. But yeah, that didn't make sense to me at all. I think that's the difference. If the logic can be inconsistent, but does it make some sort of sense? I don't understand what they think they're doing right there.
I think it depends on how you view Bowers too. Like, this is someone who can be a short yardage running back, an H-back, someone who's a slot receiver, even can play at the X sometimes. And they're clearly, I mean, this is bargain basement. I mean, I guess they spent higher draft capital than either of them, but this is bargain basement stylistically of Hernandez and Gronk.
Yeah.
Those guys who could play together.
That worked out pretty good for them at first. That worked out really badly.
Yeah. Yeah, you get the idea. On the field. My answer for who blew it is the Buffalo Bills. It's not just that they traded out of the pick to give Kansas City another weapon, which is crazy. Stop trading with the Chiefs if you're the Bills. Just stop it.
Finish.
Stop it. No. I can't believe you disagree with me. This is like, it's like when a smart GM calls you, just hang up the phone.
All right. Finish.
And then the second part is, of the receiver prospects that are out there, drafting the guy who ran a 4.7, who I know he's got exceptional ball control. He's a ball winner. And Josh, whatever. Yeah. Don't draft Kelvin Benjamin again.
Yeah.
That's Keon Coleman.
Yeah, Keon Coleman. Just because he went to Florida State, he's not Kelvin Benjamin.
He's big and slow.
Yeah. It's hard for me to argue for him because
you scared of him? 4.7?
As we've discussed, I'm not scared of guys who are big and slow. But he does a great press conference. The man made me giggle.
Oh, it's hilarious.
The shopping with the winter coat talks, outstanding. But
sorry, 4.61.
Yeah,
apologies.
4.7 is really bad. The reason why I push back on the trading stuff, and like I get it, don't give the Chiefs another weapon. That's fine.
That's who you need to beat.
Yeah, that is who you need to beat. So, and you gave them the fastest receiver in the history of the NFL combine.
The last time they had the fastest receiver in the NFL, he was the one, even though Mahomes gets a lot of credit for it now,
who was responsible for
the 13-second game.
He was, he was responsible for a lot. He was the difference maker. As much as we love Kelsey and Mahomes and all that, it felt like, saying that Mahomes wasn't a difference maker is stupid, but that offense was crazy because he's crazy. And we saw him go.
Peace sign. 13 seconds. Yeah. You are. Without Tyreek Hill.
We saw him go somewhere else and port that offense over to a quarterback that we thought was not good. My defense of the Bills was this, because I had to have this conversation too after the draft, is like, why would you trade? So if we take out the argument about you're making the Chiefs better, like they seem like they're at this point in their quarterback's life cycle that the Chiefs were a few years ago, where you're paying a lot for a few players and you're in a transition period. And in that transition period, what you need is draft picks. And if you need to fill a hole at receiver, and this is the deepest receiver draft that we've seen in recent history, then this is a good time to trade back and get some more picks. So like the Chiefs did, they drafted a bunch of players. Some of them didn't hit. A lot of them didn't hit. But enough of them hit for them to be Super Bowl champs back-to-back years. So I think my defense of the Bills is trading back is never a problem, accumulating more draft picks, especially when the hole that you need to fill is particularly deep in this draft. They got a really good receiver. Some people thought was...
could
have been a first rounder. That's fine. There's no defense for the trading with the Chiefs argument.
You can't remove it from the situation. It can't be.
Don't be scared. We ain't worried about them.
You are worried about them.
We are worried about them. We're scared.
You lose to them every year.
Clearly, they aren't scared, though. Or they gave them Patrick Mahomes, and then they gave them this.
Do you think the Bills were like, they're drafting another Kadarius Toney?
They're hoping so. Well, they didn't draft Kadarius Toney, but they're hoping so.
That's how we beat them.
Yeah, they're hoping
that's
so.
That's our best chance.
Maybe that's it. It's like, we'll put somebody else on there that will line up offsides and drop a lot of passes. Hollywood Brown.
A lot of speed now. Yeah, a lot of speed.
I know the Ravens are pissed. Oh, absolutely. They got to match up with that now?
You know how you beat speed? You get in its face. And the Ravens. Okay. The Ravens can out physical that speed.
Okay.
I'm just kidding there.
Yeah, I know you're kidding. I mean, you could try, but... whatever. Anyway.
That's what football guys would say, not computer guys.
Yeah, I guess I'm not a football guy. Get out of here with that physical. I want somebody who can fly. We'll get some physical guys later.
So not Keon Coleman, who just defended the pick.
I defended the pick, but I would have drafted him.
With the identical 40. I was right. Identical 40 times to Kelvin Benjamin upon Googling.
Well, Kelvin Benjamin got bigger when he got in the league.
He did.
Keon Coleman seems like he's not going.
But can you be an X receiver at that type of at that speed in the NFL now? Or do you have to basically function as a tight end?
I'm trying to think, going through my mind of X receivers, and I can't think of anybody who came out and was that slow. Maybe like Anquan Boldt is the last one I could think of that was like a real top tier receiver. Or like, I mean, I guess, yeah, he was an X at certain points, but came out and was like not fast immediately.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's tough.
He's unique.
Yeah, he is physical.
He's your rival.
Oh, It was a one-way rivalry.
Yeah. I mean, Jerry Rice ran a 4.71 different times.
Yeah. I don't count. The whole different time. They had a cheat code offense and all the best players in football, and including Jerry Rice.
Do you think it's – I mean, there's different – guys who are slower have 68 in the slot lately. I mean, whether it's an Amon-Ra or slower 40 times for other guys like that. Is that –
I mean, the short area quickness is what you would expect to work in a slot, and Keon Coleman doesn't have that either, so I don't know what. When you're getting those big tight end-style receivers like Drake London, is like, I think it's to help quarterbacks who have accuracy issues, right? It's like, put it in their area, they'll box up and backs out and grab it. That's not a style of play that I want to play. Mm-hmm. I want to take the roof off of this thing and that, allow that to open everything else up underneath. Like, that's just – it's my own personal bias as a player is like – or as preparing for a game, the first thing I'm looking for is who can break us in one play. Take care of him, and then work my way down the chart. If you don't have anybody that can do that, then snooze fest, load the box, and make you complete 10 passes to get down to the red zone.
I guess the outlier in this would be someone like Davante Adams, who's like an all-time route runner and has elite short area quickness, who's been able to function as an X.
That's the first name that came to my mind, but I didn't know his 40 time coming out. He certainly doesn't seem slow. He
was, I mean, I think it's interesting. I can't say that, like, I mean, the Bills have been... I guess it's a debate how close they've really been to winning the Super Bowl, but they've been in the mix every year, and it just feels really disappointing to go from that offense with Diggs and Allen to coming out of it and not having what you thought of as like one of the premier receivers from the class and giving a weapon like that to the Chiefs. I think it's impossible to separate and not look at that as a big disappointment.
Yeah, it's fine. I don't know. I disagree with you, but I also agree with you because the Chiefs are going to win the Super Bowl again. Basketball?
Save it for Tuesday.
All right. Good times. All right. Thank you, Charlie. This was fun. Appreciate it. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Podville. Beautiful studio. Shout out to all the great producers, Megan Serafita, Brian Kevin, and also Cortez, I guess. Poor Cortez. Does Heat lose again?
I don't know. He got that game.
Yeah, he did get one game. Congratulations.
I mean, he's still a coward, but yeah, he got that game.
But he did get one game. That was like a Super Bowl for him.
Yeah.
We're out.
This is the Dominique Foxworth Show.